Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the empty harvest when we come back. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs encompass the second and eighth planks to the Communist Manifesto. That's a foreign and alien ideology. Our traditional American values are individual responsibility in place of Social Security and tithing in place of the income tax. Now, these foreign and alien ideologies require of us that we violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant, and we're taught to covet our neighbor's property and then call that income redistribution. We steal from our neighbors with unjust weights and measures called Federal Reserve notes, and then practice idolatry by signing contracts with these foreign and alien gods that we call government. And we're not getting away with these crimes either. We're now paying up to 75% of everything we create and produce in taxes, and we live in mortgaged homes owned by savings and loan companies, and we drive cars that are owned by GMAC or Ford Motor Finance, and the average family of four has a $70,000 consumer debt. Then we owe another $8 trillion in national debt. Then we stand surety for another $44 trillion of unfunded government obligations, and our financial institutions are leveraged out to more than $100 trillion worldwide, and our Social Security retirement system is a chain letter Ponzi scheme, and then we live from paycheck to paycheck and call all of this prosperity. Well, the God of Israel gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers followed that better way in our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10. Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status and a better way of life, why don't you call for my 4-hour compact disc package. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. Why don't you call right now? The number to call, 417-273-4967. Remember, the General Law CD package is free. Again, that number is 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to your website and click on to georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, and then send me an email asking for that free General Law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Empty Harvest, the book written by Bernard Jensen and Mark Anderson, which deals with the connecting link with the soil. Now, we've been talking about starvation. It's talking about all of these vitamins and minerals and the benefits of organic versus chemical vitamins. But there's a second cause to disease, which is toxins, poisons. And there are two poisons that stand right at the head of the line, and that's chlorine and fluoride. You have that in your water supply. Once we poison your water supply, we got you. Now, while it's true you have a lot of lesser poisons, I mean, you know, you go in and you buy a package of cookies, and those cookies may have MSG in them, or they may have a red dye number 5. Or hydrogenated vegetable oil or something else. There's all kinds of poisons that are in your food supply. But there's one supply that you cannot escape, and that's your water. And most Americans, and indeed most people in the world, live in the cities. The world is an urban society. And when you live in the cities, the powers that be control your water, and that water has been poisoned. Now, it doesn't have to be, but here in America, we have an either-or philosophy. It's either we put chlorine in the water or we die from infectious disease. There's no other solution. There's no other answer to the problem of water supply. It's either or. Now, some way or another, the people of Moscow, Paris, and Tulsa, Oklahoma, have a different solution to the purification of water. And that is, they use ozone. Now, ozone costs more. You can treat more gallons of water with chlorine cheaper than you can with ozone. But ozone kills all of the pathogens in the water also. So it doesn't have to be either or. There's a choice to be made. Most people don't want to make that choice, or they're perfectly happy with chlorine in the water. Now, this chlorine in the water causes a malady called arterial sclerosis, hardening of the arteries. And it kills a bunch of people. A lot of people get stroke and heart attack and various other cardiovascular diseases from it. And we're here in the United States. Keep in mind, remember this, that cardiovascular disease is the number one killer. Cancer is number two. And there is a direct connecting link between fluoride and chlorine and cancer and heart disease and stroke. Now let's get back to our thyroid. Remember that thyroid is a part of your immune system. It's part of what we call the endocrine system. And the endocrine system and the immune system are the most vitamin and mineral dependent systems. Our individual survival depends upon their health. And there are several substances to be alert so to that are potentially dangerous and poisonous to the glands. Sodium fluoride is number one. And in its natural state, fluorine is an essential trace mineral present in your bones and teeth as fluoride, where it helps calcium make those tissues hard. That is calcium fluoride. And I'm going to pause right here and underline calcium fluoride. That's not what you have in your drinking water. That's not what comes out of the aluminum manufacturing or the chemical fertilizer industries. They're not selling you calcium fluoride. But calcium fluoride is most often found naturally occurring in well water. What is added to municipal drinking waters is sodium fluoride. So I'm going to underline sodium fluoride. Those are different critters. Those are different animals. Calcium fluoride is the good stuff, sodium fluoride is the bad stuff, and sodium fluoride is a deadly poison put in your water supply. And it's quite different from the natural, clean calcium fluoride. Excessive doses can be very toxic, and by excessive we're speaking of minute doses to start with. Toxic levels have been shown at merely one part per million. One part of sodium fluoride per million parts of water produces poison. Calcium is an antidote for sodium fluoride poisoning. So if we could give you calcium in sufficient quantities, it's the antidote for the sodium fluoride that you have in your drinking water. And you can fill a library with the literature from around the world about the negative effects with sodium fluoride. It's been cited as one of the most potentially toxic factors to the thyroid and endocrine system. You don't have to have a PhD in chemistry to understand why. And this relates to enzymes, which relate again to plants. Considering all that vegetation manufactures for our planet, it is no wonder that we honor it by calling our own factories plants. Of all of the substances produced by plants, the vitamin is its crowning glory. A vitamin has been described as a substance that will make you sick if you don't eat it. Sodium fluoride is a vitamin inhibitor. It is an enzyme inhibitor. And among scores of identified enzymes that it inhibits, it can destroy the important bodily enzyme phosphatase, which is vital to the metabolism of vitamins. In other words, it can destroy the catalysts that make vitamins work. So let's suppose for the sake of our discussion here that you're getting adequate vitamins, but you live in the city and your water is fluoridated. The fluoride nullifies all of those vitamins that you're taking in your food. I mean, our intention here is to kill you, partner, That's the objective. Fluorine is a halogen molecule, and the halogens form a distinct chemical group, including fluorine, chlorine, iodine, and bromine. This chemical group has the same electrical charge, all lacking one electron in their shell, and as such, they combine easily with smaller molecules that have an extra electron. Of these halogens, fluorine and chlorine are two of the most potentially poisonous substances on planet Earth. Let me put a little bracket around that. Of all of the poisons, like arsenic and cyanide and DDT and chlordane and 2,4-D, okay, listen to this. Of these halogens, fluorine and chlorine are two of the most potentially poisonous substances on the planet. And we put those in our drinking water. I don't know, kids, it doesn't make any sense to me, but then, you know, I don't make these laws, rules, and regulations. I'm just here to report. Now, these substitutes can be dangerous to deadly. One of the halogens, called iodine, the trace element of the sea, represents about 65% by weight of the hormone thyroxin. This is the hormone that regulates metabolism, or the rate at which our bodies use energy. Parenthetically, Dr. Lee was the engineer who developed the first patent for making protein-bound iodine so that it doesn't burn your stomach when you take it as a supplement. Protein-bound iodine is found in seafood such as kelp and dulse. If you're deficient in protein-bound iodine, the body may try to make thyroxin out of the next closest material, which is what? Well, it's another available halogen molecule, and it's sodium fluoride. Sodium fluoride is available because it's added artificially to half of all public water systems in the United States. This potentially toxic material now concentrates in a very small gland in your body called the thyroid. Researchers in Finland recommended against fluoridation of their water after observing a 25% weight gain in 3 years in a sodium fluoride test on residents of a small village. A weakened thyroid from the medicated water was suspected for the weight gain. The body will utilize the materials closest to specifications. What a difference one mineral can make. Would you accept payment in lead instead of in gold? During the 3 years after the Chernobyl nuclear catastrophe in April of 1986, cancer rates have doubled among residents of a contaminated farm region. There are Soviet newspaper reports of calves being born without heads and without limbs. Radioactive iodine is often leaked into the atmosphere at such disasters. Moscow News reports that over 50% of the children in the Narodisky region of the Ukraine have developed thyroid disease. The radioactive iodine will concentrate where in your body? It concentrates in your thyroid, boys and girls. It does irreparable damage to the thyroid. Now, the Polish government issued iodine pills to their population immediately following the Chernobyl disaster. And I know people who have relatives in an area outside the Soviet Union affected by the Chernobyl disaster. Well, not long ago, with their soil and water contaminated by the drifting radioactive clouds and rain, they started losing their hair. And these people called me and they said, "What should we do?" So I thought for a moment, and then, as if Zeus had put the words in my head and they came through my voice, I said loudly, "Move. Don't stay there. You don't live where nuclear fallout is falling out of the sky. Is this a trick question? We have nuclear waste sites all over America, and we don't put people there. Besides the ridiculousness of some people, I do understand, after all, that if I had to pack up and move and lose everything that I possess, it would be difficult. But you have to put everything into perspective, and life comes first. Now, protein-bound iodine is in fresh seafood and seaweed. I'm glad to see that people are eating more fish, and that's great. And I don't want to upset you about the poisons that are continuously dumped into the ocean and what's getting into the fish. The mercury, the agri poisons, and the spills from the oil industry. Hospital waste, illegally dumped into the oceans, washes up on the shore with blood-filled vials containing the AIDS virus, syringes, and other toxic debris. And the ocean should be a source of perfection, as it is our universal center of nutrition. So, as we noted, you can contaminate the soil and you can deplete the soil, but you can never deplete the sea. You can only contaminate it. Now, the oceans are always whole and complete, but it is poisoned from man's dumping and agricultural runoff. DDT has been found in the rivers and in the livers of penguins at the South Pole. The Earth's oceans and winds are like our body's bloodstream and the lymph system circulating throughout. So the pristine waters of the Arctic Ocean ultimately mingle with toxic agricultural runoff from some Illinois farm whose treated soil erodes into the Mississippi River, flows south to the Gulf of Mexico, and then follows the Gulf Stream into the Atlantic Ocean and north throughout all the rest of the world. Protein-bound iodine is a very important radiation protective factor. If you have enough iodine, then your body will not try to absorb the other halogen molecules and will resist the radioactive iodine from a nuclear discharge. Chloride, or chlorine, is now added to virtually all of the municipal water supplies as a method for sterilizing certain impurities. Non-chemical and safe alternatives are available for this task. But this is part of the cause of the current Candida albicans yeast infection problem, sterilizing the gut somewhat with a substance that is essentially Clorox every time we drink water out of the tap, or just washing chlorine into your gut, sterilizing natural, healthy, friendly bacteria. It allows Candida albicans to take over the gut, and this isn't the only cause of Candida. But it is a chronic cause that's always present. Now, a headline in the Denver Post in the summer of 1988 declared that Denver water was swimming in chlorine. The drinking of chlorinated water has finally been officially linked to an increased incidence of colon cancer. And this was the conclusion of an epidemiologist at Oak Ridge Associated Universities and reported in the April 1989 Acres USA. The report concluded that drinking chlorinated water for 15 years or more was conducive to an increased risk of colon cancer. This report added that bathing in chlorinated water because of absorption through the skin was at least equal to drinking 2 quarts of chlorinated water. Now think about that for a minute. Chlorine and fluoride are two of the most deadly poisons on planet Earth. We put both chlorine and fluoride in our drinking water. Chlorine is associated with arterial sclerosis, and fluoride with cancer. Now, both of these poisons in our water are absorbed through our skin when we take a shower. When you take a shower, it is the equivalent in the absorption of chlorine of drinking 2 quarts of that chlorinated water. Now there's a dark side of fluoride. The chemical cousin of chlorine is the halogen molecule fluorine, a widely distributed trace mineral of the earth, but naturally occurring fluorine is a far cry from artificial fluoride. Medicated into municipal drinking water systems of at least half the American population, these are cities and communities that choose to fluoridate their water supply for the usually stated reason of reducing dental caries. Now, the proponents of fluoridation point to a 50% reduction in children's cavities in the United States that artificially fluoridate. Now, these communities have known the real facts when deciding whether or not to fluoridate. I got to tell you a little story here. There was a lady called me one day on the phone from Cortez, Colorado, and she said they're going to put fluoride here in our drinking water. And she said, is there any court cases that deal with this, and is there any way that I can prohibit or prevent it? And I said, well, not that I know of. I don't know of any towns that don't have fluoride in their drinking water. Most people in America want it. They would lobby their legislators to get it if they didn't already have it. But this lady didn't want it, and I said, well, I'll research it out for you, and I got on the Nexus machine, Lexus in this case, Lexus machine, and there were 17 fluoride cases that had been decided by the U.S. Supreme Court, and surprisingly, 9 of them were winners, and 8 of them were losers. I was surprised. I would have thought it would have been 16-1 or 17-0, but 9 fluoride cases had been decided in which the Supreme Court had ruled against fluoridation or ruled against fluoride. Colorado had, they probably still do, but at least at that time they had a statute that prohibited the introduction of poisons or toxins into a water supply. It's against the law to put poison in the water. Chlorine is poison, and so is fluoride. Now, they've got chlorine in all the water supplies, but I researched that out and reported back to her, and she went down to the city council and testified. And essentially what she said was, well, here's the statute that says don't introduce these poisons into our water, and if you do, you may rest assured that litigation will surely follow. Well, they got to thinking about that, and they voted it down, which was her objective. They voted it out. City Council did. Now, I don't know whether you people out there in Cortez, Colorado have fluoride in your water or not at this date, because typically they come back 5 years later and this lady's died or moved away. Now there's no opposition, so they put it in. They just keep coming back and coming back and coming back until they succeed. And that's because there's money in it. I mean, after all, if there wasn't money, we wouldn't be doing it. Now, in the non-fluoridated cities across the United States, there has been an equal reduction in children's cavities. On October the 1st, 1988, the prestigious and authoritative trade journal, Chemical and Engineering News, the official weekly news organ of the 130,000-member American Chemical Society, reevaluated and reopened the entire debate on artificial fluoridation of public water supplies. It was an in-depth, balanced, and far-ranging examination of the issues involved, responding to the fluoridation report. And on August 23, 1988, the Christian Science Monitor printed an editorial, a reply entitled, "Fluoridation Politics Makes Bad Science." And according to this editorial, there is growing awareness of one of the lesser-known scientific scandals, the suppression in the United States, and sometimes elsewhere, of research questioning fluoridation and persecution of those scientists who get out of line. In likewise noted that there is also continuing debate about the morality of imposing medication through the water supply. And politicization of science as a public disgrace, placing propaganda above scientific objectivity. Organized opposition to debate and scientific merits of an idea or concept is more the style of a cult than of a profession claiming to be the very standard of objectivity and science. Nothing is more essential to protecting our good health than good water. After all, we're physically 70% water, and it purifies, nourishes, controls temperature, controls viscosity, and lubricates us. Where there is water, there's life. We consume water every day to live and can survive only a few days without it. Therefore, any tissue about adding, or any issue rather, about adding artificial substances to our most crucial commodity, water, should be the rightful concern of all citizens and scientists. Now, the following are some relevant extracts from the Chemical and Engineering News of August 1, 1988. Here's the moral to the story, children. Where we have fluoridated water in one city and unfluoridated water in another, we take a look at the dental caries. There's no difference between the two cities. The argument that fluorine reduces cavities is an urban legend. It's a lie. Taint so. Didn't happen. But that doesn't mean that we want to take fluoride out of the water, and that's because it is a very expensive chemical waste that has to be disposed of properly. Two industries, aluminum and chemical fertilizer, produce fluorine in such quantities that if they can just get rid of it without having to pay to get rid of it, it's a profitable item. In this case, they can actually package it and sell it to municipal corporations who put it in the water supply. And they tell you that this is going to give you less cavities. How in the hell are you going to determine whether or not you had fewer cavities or not? You and I won't have any way of knowing. The way you test that is you go test the people in Tulsa, Oklahoma that don't have fluoride, and the people that live in Miami, Florida, and that do have fluoride, and then you examine the number of dental caries, and you say, well, okay. Are there more or less in Miami? The answer is it's about the same. No statistical or scientific basis, then, for putting fluoride in the water. But there are connecting links with fluoride and other degenerative diseases. So, the valid basis for growing concerns. Hundreds of papers have been published in reputable journals, a large body of evidence of potential hazards to using fluoride. Dental benefit claims are questionable. Reductions in dental caries are just as great in non-fluoridated as in fluoridated areas. Unsightly modeling of teeth. Several studies show that the prevalence of dental fluorosis is rising, particularly at fluoride levels of 1 part per million. And early stages of skeletal fluorosis, doses as low as 2 to 5 milligrams per day, the amount of 2 to 5 liters of 1 part per million of fluoridated water, can cause the proscenial and early clinical stages, and this is generally unrecognized in the United States because most doctors in the United States do not know how to diagnose it. That's skeletal fluorosis. Osteoporosis and fluoride treatment. Well-designed studies have found no evidence of any beneficial effect of fluoridation on osteoporosis. Hypersensitivity and side effect reactions from fluoridated water. In Holland, doctors performed double-blind experiments on patients who became ill after fluoridation began in the Netherlands. It has now been banned in the Netherlands. But by using coated bottles of drinking water, some fluoridated and some not, the physician showed that the symptoms, for example, of muscular weakness, chronic fatigue, excessive thirst, headaches, skin rashes, joint pains, digestive upsets, tingling in extremities, and loss of mental acuity were caused by fluoride rather than some other factor. Enzymatic and mutagenic effects produced a transient decrease in human serum enzyme activity associated with the advent of water fluoridation. Tests show sodium fluoride mutagenic for cultured lymphoma cells. Birth defects and cancer. There was a higher rate of Down syndrome births among mothers in fluoridated areas, and after correcting for age, race, and sex, the death rate from cancer of the digestive system was 9% higher in those areas with fluoridated water. And that's the tip of the iceberg, boys and girls. There's much more in the book, which is entitled Empty Harvest. Remember, you can get a copy of it from Acres USA. It's about $14.50. That's what I paid for it. Dr. Bernard Jensen and Mark Anderson are the authors. Question rises, of course, well, what are we going to do about it? What's the solution to the problem? It's called strategic relocation. If you live in an area with fluoridated water, or fluoridated and chlorinated, which are probably both, then you have to bathe. And if you bathe, it's the equivalent of drinking the water. So just because you're drinking bottled water does not mean that you're not being fluoridated and chlorinated, which means that you need a different source of water to bathe in. That's the bottom line. And if you put your mind to it, there isn't any reason why you can't get the hell out of the city. Hey, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, remember our website is georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right. Reviewing a book called Empty Harvest. Remember, this is the book that ties together the soil depletion with disease. Soil depletion with disease. Two ways for you to get sick or diseased, and that is starvation or poison. Now, we've talked about the starvation. Now, I'm going to cover the poison. Fluoride and chlorine are the two big ones. It's been estimated that fluorine and chloride, or fluorine and chlorine in the water, are killing approximately 250,000 Americans a year. 250, that's a quarter of a million. Now, about 2.5 million people a year die here in the United States. The two big killers are heart attack and cancer. Where do we get heart attack and cancer? We get it from nutritional deficiencies and or poisons. The two big poisons that we're getting them from, chlorine and fluoride. Now, there's a beneficial fluorine, which is calcium fluoride, and then there is the sodium or the salt-based fluoride, which is the bad stuff that comes from a toxic source, which is aluminum and chemical fertilizer manufacturing. Now, finally, the most depressing of all came from the revelations of an ongoing decades-old organized suppression of scientific papers and research by competent scientists who cast any doubt on the questionable benefits or present possible dangers of medicating people's water with artificial fluoride. This stratagem to asphyxiate honest scientific debate rather than an isolated case relating to this subject appears to form a consistent pattern of commercial interests elevated above public health since the day Dr. Harvey Wiley was removed from office in 1912 at the Food and Drug Administration. The following quotes from the CNEN, that's the Chemical and Engineering News, reports speak of the pseudoscience that defends its established paradigm by casting personal attacks and defamation on those, including their peers, presenting different scientific views rather than discussing, debating, or researching the actual merits of the various scientific findings presented. Resorting to this style of character assassination action would seem to be a virtual admission of standing on scientifically wobbly ground. If the lifeblood of science is open debate of evidence, scientific journals are the veins and arteries of the body scientific, and yet journal editors often have refused for political reasons to publish information that raises questions about fluoridation. I might pause here and say, what in the hell is scientific about that? Now, Americans worship at the holy grail of science. We prefer science to revelation. Next week, we're going to take a look at revelation because our actions have, at some point in time, our actions have a conclusion. There is an end to this at some point in time. When you spend more money than you earn, at some point in time, there is a conclusion. something happens at the end of the process. What is that? When you take poison into your body, even at low doses over a long period of time, at some point in time, there will be a conclusion to the accumulation of this poison in your body. If you systematically starve your body of certain nutrients, such as vitamin C or D or A, there is a conclusion. At some point in time, there will be a final event that transpires. Generally, that's called death. Whether that death occurs when you're 42 or 82 will depend on how systemic has this poisoning or starvation been. Is it temporary or is it ongoing? Now, if the lifeblood of science is open debate of evidence, why don't we have more open debate of the fluoride evidence? Why is it that we find it in the underground press, but Katie Couric and Brian Williams don't talk about it? Now, ever since the Public Health Service endorsed fluoridation back in 1950, detractors have charged that the Public Health Service and the medical and dental establishments, such as the American Medical Association and the American Dental Association, have suppressed adverse scientific information about its effects. Let me put a bracket around that. Why would they do that? Why would the American Medical Association want to put poison into your drinking water? How would it benefit them? Well, boys and girls, as you absorb more and more poisons, there are more and more toxic effects. Toxic effects need remedies. Remedies are the stock and trade of the AMA. It's the way we make money. Doctors do not make money. Doctors do not pay their bills. Doctors don't earn income from healthy patients. You know, I'm pretty healthy, and I haven't been to a doctor in the last, 10 years. I haven't been to a doctor. My wife hasn't been to a doctor for longer than that. She's an old lady, too. Both of us are getting elderly. We stay as far away from doctors as we can get. Now, I suppose if I was suffering from a lot of pain, I'd probably want to get real close to the doctor. But I avoid pain because I'm very sensitive to it. So does my wife. And therefore, we don't need doctors if we don't have pain. If we don't have symptoms, we don't need them. Wouldn't that be a better state for everybody? What if everybody in the country, or the majority, 60, 70, 80%, or symptom-free? Wouldn't that be better for all of us? Wouldn't be best, wouldn't be better, wouldn't be good for the doctors, the AMA, or the pharmaceutical companies? Now, in 1900, we weren't selling near as many chemicals and near as many drugs as we are today. Business was not nearly as good in 1900, but then cancer only affected 1 in 33. If you want to be an oncologist in 1900, there aren't very many customers. 1 in 33. Today, every other person at some point in his life is going to be the customer of an oncologist. Somebody is going to need to take care of all these cancer patients. So if you're looking for a profession, the medical profession is a wonderful choice for the future because more and more people are going to become sick in the future than are today. Sickness and disease is a growth industry in the United States. Today, it's $1.6 trillion a year. In the next 36 months, it's going to top $2 trillion a year. 20% of the gross domestic product is going to be health care. Can't beat it. You can't beat it. And it's pretty hard to outsource. Pretty hard. Not impossible. There's a lot of outsourcing going on, like the reading of x-rays being done in India. But, you know, on balance, you know, when it comes to the doctor, you pretty much need somebody that's local. Although, when we're talking about outsourcing of medicine and medical technology, there are two big hospitals now built in India, just for treating Americans. Did you know that? I don't know if they treat others there. I imagine they take a Frenchman or a Russian if he needed some service. But these are Indian doctors trained in the United States. And these Indian doctors work in India, and they do the work for about, 16% of what they charge here in the United States. I think it's 16%. Take 100 and divide it by 8. That's 12.5%. It's about 12.5%. Boy was talking about hip replacement surgery here the other day, and over in India they do it for about $8,000. Here in the States it costs you around $60,000 to $100,000. Now typically, people would prefer to have it done here in the States, but if you got to pony up $60,000 as opposed to $12,500, where do you want to go? And so they're outsourcing that kind of work to India. So, medicine isn't outsourcing proof, but it's a little tougher to outsource the doctor and the sickness and than the remedy to another country. Now, some of those who generally support fluoridation make similar charges. An editor of the Academy of General Dentistry wrote that supporters of fluoridation have had an unwillingness to release any information that would cast fluorides in a negative light, and that organized dentistry has lost its objectivity, the ability to consider varying viewpoints together with scientific data to reach a sensible conclusion. EPA scientist Robert J. Carton stated that the agency omits 90% of the literature or metagenesy, most of which suggests that fluoride is a mutagen. Most authoritative scientific interviews or overviews of fluoridation have omitted negative information about fluoridation, even when the oversight is pointed out. The CNEN cites as an example of this a professor of environmental medicine in Denmark. His name is Felipe Grandjean, writing about a World Health Organization study on fluorides, stating, "Information which could cast any doubt on the advantage of fluoride supplements was left out by the task group. Unless I had been present myself, I would have found it hard to believe." In 1982, John A. Calcahoon, former principal dental officer in the Department of Health in Auckland, New Zealand, was told after writing a report that showed no benefit from fluoridation in New Zealand's water supply, the department refused him permission to publish it. That's not freedom of speech or freedom of expression, nor is it scientific objectivity. That's just propaganda. That's sales. Nothing more, nothing less. Now listen, kids, we don't have to buy this. We don't have to buy it. And you don't have to buy fluorine or fluoride, and you don't have to buy chlorine. You can move. Whatever it is you're doing, where you're doing it right now, you can do somewhere else. If you're a waitress in Dallas, Texas, boys and girls, there are waitresses in Springfield, Missouri, and Isabella, Missouri. Why don't you think about moving? Why don't you get yourself out in the countryside where you can get your fluorine through the well water, which is the natural source of calcium fluorine, instead of sodium fluoride, which is a toxic waste substance from industry. I mean, if they weren't putting it in our water supply, they'd have to be dumping it down the Mississippi River, and God knows what it would do if we poured it down the Mississippi River. I mean, it's polluted enough already, isn't it? Well, the ADA and the PHS, Public Health Service, have actively discouraged research into the health risks of fluoridation by attacking the work or of attacking the character of the investigators. So let's not investigate fluoride. Let's ridicule and make fun of the investigators. As part of their political campaign, they have over the years collected information on perceived anti-fluoridation scientists, leaders, and organizations, and it's used not only in efforts to counteract arguments of the anti-fluoridationists, but also to discredit the work and objectivity of U.S. scientists whose research suggests possible health risks from fluoridation. So we want to discredit the work and the objectivity of any scientists whose research suggests that there's health risks from fluoridation. Character assassination has nothing to do with science, has everything to do with propaganda and sales. Personally, I just don't want to buy the program or buy the product. Now, let's see here. I've got Nature's Chemistry, four pages, and I wanted to tell you about them, page 125. You can't beat God. And when God designs something, he does a pretty good job. There can be little doubt that the greatest and most enduring of medical discoveries of the 20th century were the vitamins. And here at last was the discovery of factors that caused health. Vitamin A in 1912, the first vitamin to be discovered, was named retinol because without it, a healthy retina in the eye could not be formed. When it was found to cure night blindness, and that was just the beginning, along came the B vitamins and the cures for beriberi, pellagra, pernicious anemia, nerve degeneration, enlarged heart, energy production, and much more. These factors all came from unprocessed, whole, natural foods. And it was becoming increasingly clear that vitamins were biological complexes, bundles of enzymes and trace minerals, biological wheels within wheels within wheels, trying to identify a vitamin in terms of a single chemical structure is self-defeating, because you have to have the whole complex to get the vitamin function in the first place. The failure of the pharmacological approach to vitamins originated in the chemist's synthetic isolation of a single element uncombined with its biologic matrix. But the discovery of the vitamins coincided with the boom in industrial, agricultural, and pharmaceutical chemistry, which was crowding its way into all of the facets of life. But it was in the attempted duplication of living things, like artificial fertilizers or artificial vitamins, that chemistry had its most distorting influence. In his textbook on the new medical science of clinical ecology, human ecology, and susceptibility to the chemical environment, 7th edition, published in 1980, Theron G. Randolph, M.D., wrote, quote, "A synthetically derived substance may cause a reaction in a chemically susceptible person when the same material of natural origin is tolerated, despite the two substances having identical chemical structures." Now, this point is illustrated by the frequency of clinical reactions to synthetic vitamins, especially synthetic vitamin B1 and synthetic vitamin C. And when these naturally occurring vitamins are tolerated, there is also other evidence indicating that the biological activity and synthetic and natural vitamins is not identical. There is a clear and distinct difference between chemical vitamins and organic vitamins. The implications of this upon our general state of health are profound. The modern Western diet has relied upon the process of enrichment of foods and synthetic vitamins after they have been denuded of all or most naturally occurring nutrients through the processing and refinement of those foods, as in the case of all enriched flour and enriched rice products. It is assumed that all you have to do to make those staple foods healthy is to spray a few synthetic vitamins back in, but white bleached white flour has more than 30 known nutrients removed with our synthetically added back in, or which are synthetically added back in. There's four of those. Enrichment of flour began in 1939 with federal law. Now get this. We take the whole grain and we take out 30 vitamins and minerals. And then we take some synthetics that we make chemically in the laboratory and put four of them back in. And we call that enriched flour. What do you think of that, boys and girls? Isn't that just real special? And it's more than interesting to observe that the first mention of heart failure by that name appeared in medical literature in 1912. Sudden death by heart attack was extremely rare during the last century, as evidenced by a lack of a medical term for it. The first commercially milled and bleached flour, the process in which the vitamin-containing germ, such as vitamins E and B complexes and trace minerals, and fiber-rich bran are all removed, and it occurred in this century about 1905. And one of Mr. Harvey Wiley's goals as first head of the Bureau of Chemistry, which is now the Food and Drug Administration, was to use the newly enacted Pure Food and Drug Law of 1906 to declare refined and bleached flour products an adulterated food, thereby preventing interstate shipment. He was determined. Now, this is the first head of the FDA. He was determined in his efforts undermined in his efforts by powerful commercial interests with strong political allies like Kellogg's and Post and Kraft. Now that's where reality lies. ADM and Cargill and Tyson will have their lobbyists in the Capitol pushing for the laws that they want passed or enacted to benefit those corporations and their profit structure. So don't think for a moment now that the FDA or any government agency or any of these multinational corporations give a rat's you-know-what for your health, safety, or welfare. That's just nonsense. Now, the book that exposes that connection between the soil and the poisons, and the soil, and the malnutrition is called Empty Harvest. Understanding the link between our food, our immunity, and the soil. Remember, if they can get you to ask the wrong questions, then they don't have to worry about the answers. And this book is written by Dr. Bernard Jensen and Mark Anderson. Again, Empty Harvest, Dr. Bernard Jensen and Mark Anderson. You'll probably get a copy from Barnes & Noble or Acres USA. Hey, we're about out of time again, kids. Let me remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and or the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.